Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
As a companion piece to Cold Blooded, these are just some additional episodes to give you a greater insight into the crimes and lives of Private Carl Holton, alias Ricky Allen, and Elizabeth Baker, alias Georgina Grayson. The regular episodes of Murder Mile return at the end of January, with possibly a little surprise in between. Until then, thank you, Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year. Okay, folks, we're back. Let's continue with part two of Elizabeth's more accurate statement. So don't forget, the car has just pulled up. George Heath's taxi has just pulled up, not on the Great West Road, not too far outside of the Chiswick roundabout, which is where the Chiswick flyover is now. She said she's just heard Ricky pull out his gun and it go click. So he's pulled back the hammer. So let's finish that statement. Heath leaned over from his seat towards the middle of the car with the obvious intention of opening the near side back door for me to get out. Ricky was sitting to my right, so Ricky is behind the driver. And as Heath was leaning over, I saw a flash and I heard a bang. I was surprised that there was not a loud bang because Ricky had told me it would make a big noise when it went off. I was deafened in my right ear by the bang. Heath moaned slightly and turned a little towards his front. Ricky said to him, "Move over or I'll give you another dose of the same." I saw that he still had the automatic in his hand. Heath seemed to understand what Ricky said because he moved further over to the left-hand side of the front seat until his... We just open the next statement. Number five. Sorry, there's a lot of statements. They're not on the same page, they're all on individual pages. So his shoulder was almost touching the near side of the door. Don't forget, these aren't individual seats like we have in cars now. These are those long seats that you can sit two people on. The shoulder was almost touching the near side door. I heard him breathing very heavily and his head slumped onto his chest. The next I realised was that Ricky was in the driving seat and the car was moving. As we went over the bridge nearby, Ricky told me, so there's no commas in this, it's really frustrating. As we went over the bridge nearby, Ricky told me to tear down the back window blind to see if there was anyone following us. Now, just to point out, because this is a blackout era, you tended to have a lot of your side windows and especially your back window blacked out. That way that if you switch your light on or if you have to, your light doesn't escape because we're in blackout conditions. So, I tore down the right corner down. I looked out and told Ricky that no one was following. Ricky then told me to go through Heath's pockets. I leaned over and heard his breath coming in short rasps. Ricky told me to look for his wallet in the breast pocket of his jacket. I felt in the pocket, but I did not find the wallet. It's amazing that she doesn't have blood on her hands, given the fact that he was shot through the back and the blood was coming through the midsection of the front that had nicked his lung as well. So she would have had blood on her hands. Ricky told me to look for his pocket. I felt in his pocket but did not find his wallet. I found it instead in the left hand outside pocket of his overcoat. It was a small folding wallet with a photograph inside and four £1 notes in it. Four £1 notes is probably barely about £100, if that. I put the wallet on the back seat I then remove the papers and a white book from his pockets. That's his logbook. Among these were his identity cards, from which I learnt his name and his address, a checkbook with a blue cover, a driving licence, a blue card, some petrol coupons. Don't forget it's wartime, so petrol is rationed at this point. And some photographs and letters. I also put this stuff on the seat by my side. From the trouser pocket, I took £1 in silver and a few pennies, which I put in my pocket. From the other pockets, I took a big brown fountain pen, a silver pen, a long silver cigarette case with a funny sliding action to open it. It was engraved 119 Regent Street, W1, printed on the bottom side. An expensive looking lighter with a snap down action. I put all of these things in my pocket. Ricky then asked me if Heath had a watch, and I found a wristwatch on Heath's left wrist, and I gave it to Ricky. I think I took everything from the pockets. All this time, Ricky was driving fast along the road, and I sat back examining the things I had taken from Heath's pockets. Don't you think that she would be more upset having seen a man get shot? If she's being accurate here and she's like, oh, I'm really upset by this, wouldn't you be in tears? I know I would be if I hadn't intended someone to die. Ricky told me to put all of the valuable things which I thought he would want to keep in my pockets and put the other stuff on the back seat. I did this, and then he told me to look on the floor of the car with the torch, that's George's torch, to look for the bullet. So that would be the bullet. It wouldn't be the casing of the bullet, but it would be the bullet itself, because it had gone through George Heath's back and his front. I did this, but I did not find the bullet. Ricky drove until he turned off the main road and onto some sort of common. So this is Knowles Green. He drove onto the grass and stopped 2 or 3 yards from the ditch. He got out and dragged Heath's body from the car and rolled it into the ditch. Obviously, she's not mentioning here that she helped carry the body as well. He said, we know that two people carried the body because there would have been heavier kind of grass stains underneath. There was kind of slight grass stains where he'd been put down and kind of moved a bit. But, you know, he hadn't been, his clothes weren't all rucked up around him. He said there was blood on his hands, and I gave him Heath's handkerchief to wipe it off. He then told me to pick up the papers and get into the front seat quickly. He told me to be careful of fingerprints at the same time. He turned the car right round and drove over the grass and eventually onto the road again. Entirely missing there is the fact that, don't forget, the reason why we know what car it was because they drove off onto the grass and then they tried to get back onto the road. The car was really struggling because the ground was boggy and it was kind of bouncing around, and that's when the handbrake spring came off as well, and there were big clods of kind of grass stuck under the car as well. After we got off the grass, he told me to look for the bullet again with the aid of Heath's torch. I found a bronze coloured bullet on the floor by the near side door, and I gave it to Ricky. After I found the bullet, Ricky told me to take over the wheel, and he said he wanted to look at the things I had taken from Heath's pockets. I drove along, and I noticed that there was no window in the offside door of the car near the driving seat. Just going to change page. Bear with. As I drove, Ricky was examining the things from Heath's pockets, and he threw the wallet and the papers out of the window as we went along. He threw the bullet away as we were driving along a wide road which had something in it to separate the traffic going in the opposite direction. So that is the Great West Road. But the problem is, the Great West Road is, the reason why it's called the Great West Road, it is very long and it's very wide, and it's very difficult. Very difficult to kind of find what they found. We do know that, as mentioned in the episode, some things were found. The wallet was found, some of George Heath's ID, but obviously the bullet is tiny, and it would be mistaken for like just a bit of metal. Just before we got to the roundabout near where Ricky shot Heath, that's the Chiswick roundabout, I asked him where we had dumped the body, and he said stains. It wasn't actually stains. just, it's not far from Staines, though. It's just outside the town of Staines. Just before we got to the roundabout, Ricky took the wheel and drove the car into the old Gaumont car park behind Hammersmith Broadway. We then went to the Black and White Cafe in Hammersmith Broadway. See, there she's able to identify exactly the name of the cafe, and had something to eat. It was then about 4:15 in the morning. There were quite a number of cab drivers in there, and I asked Ricky to ask one of them to drive us home, but none of them would. Kind of quite lazy, because it's only about a 5-minute walk from there, so it's not like they're miles away from home. I should say that when we put the car in the car park, we wiped everything inside and out the car with our handkerchiefs. See, being forensically aware, making sure that there were no fingerprints in there. So, on both counts, quite cruel and kind of cunning, really. They're not really thinking, at no point, you'll see this with Carl's statements as well, so I'm not just having to go at Elizabeth, at Georgie. At no point do they ever go, do you know, the poor gentleman, do you know, he was shot, I really, really worried for his family and stuff like that. It's all about them. It's all incredibly selfish on both parts. So, yeah. After leaving the car, we walked home. When we got indoors, I said, "He's dead, isn't he?" And Ricky said, "Yes." I said, "That's cold-blooded murder, then. How could you do it?" And he said, "People in my profession haven't the time to think what they do." Did that really happen? We don't know. But obviously, that could be an embellishment of hers to kind of... That's the kind of the only hint of remorse that's in her whole statement. Indoors, we examined all of Heath's things we had taken from him and then went to bed. See, that I think that is nearer to who she really is. Next day, this was a Saturday... We got up at 10 to 11 in the morning. Ricky went out and he picked up Heath's things and then took them with him. He came back at 2:45 p.m. and told me he sold the wristlet watch to a barber next door to the cafe in Hammersmith Broadway. He then told me to hurry up as we were going to the dogs. That's a dog track over at White City. When we got downstairs, I saw Lenny, that's Len Bexley, and the three of us went to the White City Stadium. After one or two races, I offered Lenny a cigarette. excuse me. I knew that cough was coming. and whilst I was feeling for my lighter, he took one from his own pocket, and I saw clearly that it was the one that I found in Heath's clothes. I'm sure he had not hand... Hang on. I am sure he did not hand the lighter to Ricky. Sorry. After racing, we left Lenny in the Broadway and we went to Victoria where we had some food and then we went to the cinema to watch Christmas Holiday. He, i.e. Ricky, saw me home that night and left me at about 10:30 p.m. saying he was going to Victoria to get a hotel room. The reason for this was because he could not stop in my room that night because my landlady was being home all day on Sunday. I stayed in all day until about 8:30 p.m. when I went out to buy some cigarettes. I could not get any in the Black and White railway station. Sorry, I could not get any in the Black and White cafe. I walked over to the public house next to the Metropolitan Railway Station and saw an RAF man going into the public house. Now, I entirely missed this out of the episode because it kind of slowed everything down. It really wasn't that important, but it's kind of interesting to... get a perspective on Georgie here. I asked him to get me 20 player cigarettes. Don't forget, this is... I think I mentioned this an extra mile. We're still in an era here where women aren't allowed to go into public houses alone. They have to be accompanied by men. It was still that way up until kind of early to mid-1970s. He said that he would come out... this is the RAF man. He said that he would and came out and said he couldn't get any. He suggested that we go to another public house nearby and invited me to have a drink. We went into the bar and had two beers and bought some cigarettes and then we went to another public house and had some more drinks. That sounds lovely. At 10 p.m. he asked me if he could walk me home and I said, yeah. I took him up to my room. Saucy. Whilst I was in my room, he asked me what was worrying me, and I told him about the murder, as you do. I told him that I had been with a man who had shot a fellow and that his name was George Heath of Kennington. George Heath had ID on him, which stated that his address was Kennington, but he no longer lived in Kennington. He asked me what was the motive. I said robbery, and asked him what I should do about it. See, this is the same thing as before with Harry Kimber, where she finds a father figure and she kind of needs advice there. Or is it? We don't know. He said, do as your conscience guides you. So I asked what I should do if my conscience said nothing. That's just objectionable here. It's like someone has been murdered and he says, do what your conscience guides you to do. And she goes, I don't really have a conscience. I think that says a lot. I'm just going to change page. He asked me if I thought, bear with, page 7, 2 more pages to go. I hope you're all okay there. He asked me that I ought to tell the police about Ricky and said, I don't know what to do because I'm frightened. He said, would you like me to do something for you, such as to go to the police? And I said, no. He said, if there is anything you need me to do, write to me. And he gave me his name and address. I wrote his name and address on a piece of paper which I hand to you. It wasn't released. What was the name of that RAF officer? Or if it was, it wasn't in the file I had. I then heard a whistle in the street, which I recognised as Ricky. I told Mac, so that is the name of the RAF officer. I told Mac who he was and went down to the street door and let Ricky in. I told him I had a friend in my room and he became jealous. So I told him that my friend had been... excuse me... I told him that my friend had been sent up to me by my people in Wales. He believed that. Ricky sat on the stairs, and as Mac came out of my room, I introduced them. Before Mac left my room, I told him Ricky was the man who had shot Heath. Ricky and I then went around to the car park, and I saw the Ford V8 there. Ricky said, it's all right. We have no need to worry. There's nothing in the papers and the police have not found the body yet. Actually, they had. On seeing the car, we were both reassured and went to Reading in it. Ricky said, we'll go and see if we can find a girl, meaning to steal from her. I asked him if he was going to use the gun and he said no. He couldn't see anything at Reading, and we rode around for about an hour. We went to sleep in the car, and when we woke up in the back of the car, we were in the back of the car park, where he took 2 5-gallon tins of petrol from an American truck, which was parked there. American soldiers were asleep on the trucks. He put the petrol in the car and left the 2 tins in the garage. He told me to tear off the blind of the back of the car and to wipe off all the fingerprints. Then we drove to Piccadilly and saw a prostitute wearing a fur coat, which seemed to attract Ricky's eye. Now, don't forget, this is the prostitute that they went hunting for afterwards. Although, again, it was Ricky who said that it was Georgie who was saying, we're going to find a prostitute and we're going to do her in. Obviously, she doesn't say that here. He said, I'll get the girl and get her coat. There was a policeman standing near, so we prowled around and around. We gave some soldiers a lift from one place to another during the night. We returned to Piccadilly to try and pick up the prostitute with the fur coat, and Ricky was disappointed because he saw her walking off with an American soldier. We got back to Wood Lane in Shepherd's Bush at about 7 o'clock in the morning and went to the cafe and had some eats. We left the car outside the cafe, which was near Wormwood Scrubs. He then drove me home, and on the way he asked me to go to Reading with him and said he would teach me to shoot. I didn't want to go and he became mad. He drove the car to the first turning past my house and parked it behind the air raid shelter. It was then about 7:30 in the morning, and I went up to my room and slept until about 20 to 2. Then he went out and promised to call me at about 5:30, just after he left. I saw him drive past the house in the car, and I have not seen him since. During that week, Ricky was with me. He told me of several jobs he'd done in Hammersmith and Shepherd's Bush. He said he'd broken into an off-licence or public house in Hammersmith. I think it was the Hope. He said he got £50 or over there. I'm just going to change page. This is the final page of this statement. Bear with. This is so last paragraph. He said that so that was on the Wednesday last week that he'd broken into a jeweller's shop in King Street, and on another occasion a gown shop called Richards or Richardson in King Street. A cafe in Shepherd's Bush, a greengrocer's, a pawn shop, not that kind of pawn shop, or a second-hand shop. He also told me that he'd broken into several public houses in the Reading district and had shot an American soldier who I think he said he had drowned. Another thing he said was that he'd killed a man and a woman with a gun in the West End. Ricky never gave me any money except when he went to the dogs on Saturday. He then let me bet with his money and kept the winnings. In this way, I got £7. So that is the end of that statement, which was given to Divisional Detective Inspector Albert Tansel, who was the investigator on that. So, folks. Next up, we'll do Ricky's statement. So I hope you're enjoying these. I'm trying to keep them as consistent as possible, up to about 20 minutes maximum. God, I hope my throat lasts for the rest of this. My throat is absolutely red raw now. Not used to talking this much. I normally just sit here quietly by myself and get ignored and then get shouted at by Eva. So we'll do Ricky's statements very shortly. I might have a cup of tea in between. Do you know what I've got here? I've got I've just had a Belgian bun because I deserve one. And I've got a rock cake as well. Oh my God, that's good. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to and supporting the show. And I hope you're enjoying these extra pieces that are coming out. So thank you for supporting the show. Have a good week. Lots of love, everyone. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.